podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
With the Planet Fitness Black Card, you don't just get a great workout, you get a great perk out, because your membership is packed with perks. Join for just $1 down and $24.99 a month.
Join the judgment-free zone today. Deal ends Thursday, August 10th.
See Home Club for details.
All right, the Reds, it is weekender, and it is your season preview weekender. We are on the verge of watching the mighty Reds, the champions of the Premier League, the side that won 99 points last season and 97 points the season before. We're about to watch that side attack another Premier League season and try and win it for the 20th time and draw level with them bastards up the road. So yeah, you've got me, Gareth Roberts, you've got Amani, you've got Phil Blundell, and you've got John Milburn. And we're all going to get excited about the season and that, because, you know, that's what it's all about, isn't it? So Phil, what are your sort of general, how are you feeling about the Reds, Phil, in a general sense right now, and about the season ahead?
Generally all right. I think it's still the same fantastic football team, and people talk about there being a little bit of a drop-off at the back end of the season, but I think you'll need to go back and watch the Arsenal away game and see that you lose 3 points there because Alisson and Van Dijk do things that they would never, ever do. So the drop-off probably isn't really a thing, and you'd expect us to come flying out. It's not an easy start. It's a very difficult promoted team, probably one of, if not the best promoted teams in the last 10, 15 years. It's Chelsea who've bought... they're on the way to assembling one of the best attacks about. It's Arsenal, who are a little bit looking like they've got a bit of grit and determination about them. It's not an ideal 3 games to start off with, but the positive to having a hard start is if you get off to a flyer and you take 9 points or possibly even 7 points, you're in a really good position where you can sort of kick on and feel really positive about the season, I think.
I'm liking the vibes, Phil. We're going to talk about Leeds at the end of the show with this panel. But we've also got Ben Burke, known from Boss Night with John Gibbons, on his new single. We've also got Steve Goldsmith talking about the latest on Sunderland and a potential takeover. But Amani, this week, Liverpool players were named in the PFA Team of the Year again. That's because they're good in that. Trent was named Young Player of the Year because he's very good, and him alongside Jordan Henderson, Sadio Mane, Andy Robertson and Virgil van Dijk were all in that Team of the Year from the PFA, from their peers. So, you know, there's little bits and bobs out there in the mainstream media, on social media, of people writing Liverpool off already. It's always the way. I mean, what else do you expect Gary Neville to say? He's a mank. But we're all right, aren't we, Amani? We're going to be all right.
Yeah, absolutely. It's pretty crazy because we've had an insane year. But for the most part, like, we know that these guys are being hungry. I think they're addicted to winning now. I think they've lost enough. I think they're tired of it. And like, now they've gotten a taste of, like, glory and success winning year after year. I think that's just something that they're really going to aim for. We're rock solid in almost every position on the pitch. Like, we know that they're going to come out, and we have, like, you know, 6-7 captains in the team. You could say that even guys who didn't make the Team of the Year, like, how did Salah not make it? But, you know, even guys that didn't make the Team of the Year, they're captains in their own right. And it's kind of great, you know, just what Jordan Henderson did for Degs the other day just shows, like, the quality of character that we have on the side. And it's really great to see because we know they're going to push forward now. It feels good.
And Johnny, I'm glad you can join us today, mate, and you're not sort of surfing the waves of Merseyside, as you seem to have been doing for most of lockdown. How are you feeling about the new season? I mean, I guess we've got to temper some of the sort of, you know, everyone getting giddy and excited with the fact that, you know, the current situation with coronavirus in the UK and the fact that there was supposed to be a professional game of football this weekend played with some fans in and that's now being cancelled. That's a little bit of a downer on it for me. And, you know, there is now the prospect of, it looks like to me at least, and I don't think I'm alone in this, a fairly substantial amount of time added on to what we've already had where we can't actually get in the grounds. I mean, do you think that has any bearing on Liverpool, the way they play, the fact that they won't have support behind them for at least the, you know, it's at least till October, but I would suggest it's probably likely to be further than that.
I think it can be overstated to the extent of it, but I do think it's a factor. I think you can't have it both ways. You can't say we're the best, we've got the best atmosphere in the league, and the importance of Anfield on European nights. And Klopp mentions it; he rallies the fans in almost every press conference to get behind the team. You can't say that's important on one hand, and then not say it's unimportant when it can't happen. So I do think it's a factor. It's certainly. I'm kind of in the camp where I think the season's come round a bit fast for me. I normally like to, the end of the season comes round, I enjoy a bit of a break, I then have Glastonbury, I then recover from Glastonbury, then I've got a few more weeks to start thinking about things, then pre-season happens, and then you're back in. It feels like it's come back to back really, really quickly, and I've definitely not had my chance to reset yet. And I think the idea that we're not able to get into the ground has sort of got me feeling... I wouldn't say I'm any less enthusiastic about this season or about this Liverpool team, but I'm beginning to feel a bit frustrated that I feel a bit more remote from the. It feels a bit like Sod's Law, doesn't it? Like the best Liverpool team in a generation, 30 years of pain and frustration, and we're now at the point where we get to enjoy though. We should be able to enjoy that this team, and unfortunately, we've got all of these barriers in place, but you've got to remember how good they are, Gareth, and how good they were. Yeah. I think it's easily forgotten, and I think on the one hand you could say we've not really played that well since February, barring one or two exceptions. I think the Crystal Palace game was a notable exception to that, and also I think we played in spells against Chelsea incredibly well. I think. We've not really put consistent form together in all that period of time, but there's a huge amount of mitigation about it. Prior to that, this Liverpool team was just... It's the best football team I think I've watched, certainly the best Liverpool team I've watched. And as you know, I've been attending Anfield since the early 80s, and I've seen some incredible football teams. And I was there when John Barnes and Beardsley were playing, and so even can vaguely remember bits of Kenny in his pomp, certainly towards the end of his career. And this team's right up there with it. A couple of seasons ago, we beat Arsenal, I think it was 5-1. Then we had a couple of penalties in the game, and that was the day for me. I thought, this is probably the best Liverpool team I've ever seen, and it could be the best Liverpool team I ever see. And so for me, I've got that real frustration. I want to get in the ground. I want to see it. I want to breathe it and live it whilst it's still a thing. And as you say, the state of the country and the coronavirus situation, I'm beginning to get a little bit pessimistic as to whether we are going to get to. It's going to be like Muhammad Ali, robbed of his prime by not being able to fight in his key years because of his refusal to participate in the Vietnam War. Sorry, went on a bit there, but.
Did not think I'd be getting a Vietnam War mention in this, to be perfectly honest.
I didn't think we were going to get that, to be honest with you there, Phil, but you know, it is what it is. I mean, one of the things, Phil, that's made this side so great to watch, like Johnny's can't even say that word, saying the boss about, that's the one, is the front three, mate. And you know, there's some stuff out there from pundits the last few days, which... I'm sure, knowing you, I reckon you buzzed off it as much as I did, which was that, well, if Liverpool get five injuries, you know, they're stuffed. And it's like, well, take five of the top players out of any side, though, and wouldn't they be stuffed? But there's some stuff in The Guardian today and Andy Hunt's piece where he's talking about how much the front three has played. And he's not saying it in a negative way, it's a fact. And how resilient they've been, how many goals they've scored and all that kind of stuff. And it is quite remarkable, some of it. I mean, since they first started playing together, there's been 114 Premier League games, and I think it's Firmino's missed 5 and Salah's missed 6. Mane's missed 14 because he did have a hamstring injury and a suspension. But, you know, that's an awful lot of football that they've all managed to be on the pitch for. And so is there something in this when people are saying, you know, when they're chipping away at what we've got, if you like, and saying, yeah, but, you know, there isn't that much strength and depth there?
It feels like people are just looking for it. For something to find, they have to talk about and focus on a negative. And you've got to remember that a lot of this is the manager wanting them to play every week because they're that good at football. It's not like, how do you go out and buy a player who comes in and does anything like they do? I mean, Timo Werner was obviously the big one from the summer. He hasn't signed how many games do you think Timo Werner would have started through choice in the league this season? It's probably not more than 10, is it? The manager's probably not breaking that front three up more than 10 games this season, I don't think. And that's when he's got the player there. So it feels like there's some kind of, you have to find the negative, as I said, you have to find the negative. Now, they might get injured, but maybe there's, maybe the manager's got something up his sleeve for when that happens. Now, it's last season, it felt a little bit, it was frustrating for me when one of them would not be playing and it would then be, didn't matter who it was, Origi would play on the left. Mane would go on the right, Salah would go up front, Firmino would still fade through the middle and or whatever. There would be something that would just involve Origi and there would be no tactical changes, there'd be nothing, it would just be that. Now, if the manager's come up with a solution to this problem, then there might be games where he actively leaves one of them out anyway. So to say that how will Liverpool cope without one of them if they get injured, it might not be something that matters anyway.
Yeah, I mean, there have been some different things with formations and stuff over the summer, if we're calling it the summer. We'll probably get onto that a little bit later on. But the other thing of mine is that, you know, obviously a lot of bookies are making Manchester City the favourites to win the title this year. Chelsea are much shorter odds than they once were because, like Phil mentioned, they've obviously spent a lot of money, signed some impressive players, and if Frank Lampard can make them gel, which Klopp was throwing some doubt at, which I enjoyed, then you know they may well be up there as well. But then you know after Chelsea, you know you can get 16 to 1 on Man United, you can get 33 to 1 on Arsenal to win the league. So. Have you got any fears about Manchester City? I mean, they're all right, aren't they?
Yeah, but you know, we're better. So actually, not at all. For the most part, like, I think that our team has the most incentive to come out and kind of do almost exactly what they've done last year, even though that's pretty much impossible because they were incredible. Like, we were talking about Invincibles in January, February type of stuff. And that's not something that people get to say every generation, let alone every year or every decade even. But for the most part, I think they really want to celebrate with the supporters. I mean, to win a title in the way that they did it, to kind of like be in the bubble and not even have their friends and family there and not have the huge parade celebrations and not have this huge outpouring of emotion that everybody just craves so much. If I'm a player, if I'm Andy Robbo, you know, he's got family support. If I'm Trent, you know, you've got family to support Liverpool, they're going to be going after it because they're going to want us to win more trophies. They want to win the title this year or win some kind of trophy that we could just celebrate how good we are. For me, it just doesn't seem like they're going to let off at all. Not really worried, to be honest.
What about you, Johnny? Any angst about what other teams have been doing? That having a look at the odds for the title is quite amusing, by the way. I've found an amusing sidetrack just as Armani was talking. Not that I wasn't interested. It was more that Leeds are 150 to 1 to win the title and Everton are 200 to 1 to win the title. Get in! but yes, Johnny, any angst about our rivals this season?
I wouldn't say angst about our rivals. I think there's always angst. I think we like to be bullish and we like to be to because of everything I said previously, what a brilliant side this is and the strengths that we've got. But we have had 30 years of things going wrong and the sky falling in. So there's still enough recent memory of things not going our way. And it doesn't take much for things. So I don't think it's going to be a cakewalk. I think it's going to be a lot closer than certainly last season. I can't see it. As I said earlier, I don't think we played that great since February and we still won the league by 18 points. It's absolutely insane. I think Liverpool will have a good season. I make them favourites to be champions. I think there's a lot that can go wrong at Man City this season. I think they've got. I don't think they've done enough in the transfer window, enough changes, and I think they've got probably more hazards across their team, things that could potentially go wrong than Liverpool have. I think Chelsea are a rising force. That's great. They spent some money, but as Klopp and yourself have said, Gareth, that's got to gel and it's got to come together relatively quickly. And those players have only been on board a few weeks with a much shortened pre-season. So there's no guarantees there at all. And they've got a lot of ground to catch up, haven't they? Do you know what I mean? I know when Man City got the 100 points, we were like 20 odd points behind. I think it was 25 points behind them. And I think we, when that happened, I don't think City were looking over the shoulder thinking Liverpool are going to come next season, but we did, and we ran them all away. So the threat could come from an unexpected location, but I think if anyone comes close to this Liverpool team, they're going to have to put a good season together, because we are night and day. We knocked off from February and we were still nearly 20 points ahead of everybody else. So there was about a fifth of the season still to go, and we knocked off. So there's a lot of ground to make up. So I'm not worried about injuries. This Liverpool team, the one thing you can say about not changing it a great deal is that it's a proven entity. There's no doubt in that team. No one's looking at our fullbacks going, I wonder if they can cut it three seasons on a run or whatever. No one's looking at our centre-half partnerships thinking they're not going to work. The goalkeeper's proven. Right the way through the team, there's absolute champions. Walking into this season, there'll be real, real confidence. They're not going to drop by 30 points, and Chelsea needs to improve by 30 points to come anywhere near this team. So I think I'm talking myself into it, Gareth. We're not going to win it by miles, but I'm convinced we're going to be there or thereabouts this season.
Love it, love it. Lovely bullish chat from John Milburn there. Well, we're going to be back very, very shortly to talk about the Leeds United game on Saturday at Anfield. Before all that, got Ben Burke with John Gibbons. We've got Steve Goldsmith with the latest on Sunderland as well. So stay with us and we'll be back to chat about Dirty Leeds.
So it is John Gibbons for the weekend. I'm delighted to be joined over Zoom by Ben Burke, musician, Liverpool fan, obviously. Ben, thanks a lot for joining me.
How are we, mate?
All good, all good. I just want to start a little bit how people who do know you will know you, which is from the boss stuff. You've been involved in the boss nights for a while. So how did that happen, first of all? How did you get involved in those?
Well, actually, it's a bit of a long story, but I'll try and cut it down a bit. A couple of years ago, probably about 5 years ago, I was in a band called The Stamp, and we were doing all right.
Yeah, remember, yeah.
Done a little tour around Europe and stuff, supporting The View. And then from there, John Johnson, who's involved with Boss Night, he'd started doing photos for the band. So he was like, yeah, I'll get you on a Boss Night. But that was back then, you know what I mean, before it had really, really took off.
Mm.
So we played with him, and then but the band split up anyway, and blah, blah, blah. And I cracked on writing my own stuff and stuff. And from there, it must have been, 2017, 2018, that season. Jono ended up getting in touch and saying, yeah, there's slots there at the Boss Night in District, if you fancy it. So I started doing the games there, playing after the games there. And obviously I played in District while they went to Kiev, do you know what I mean? Because I was just like slowly getting my foot in the door, like, yeah, kind of thing. And then, yeah, obviously last year was just unbelievable, wasn't it? You know what I mean? You were there yourself, weren't you? It was just incredible.
Yeah, so I mean, we'll talk a bit about Madrid then, because, you know, you've alluded to it there, doing the main stage there. I mean, the nights are great, and, you know, I love going to them. I'm sure you love playing them, but, you know, obviously Madrid was something else, another experience. You know, you must have been made up to get the nod for that, and then, you know, to see so many people there for you, like...
Well, I was just going to say, no one really could have prepared me, or I don't think anyone really could have been prepared for how actually unbelievable it was. It was just mind-blowing, wasn't it? Like, you know, the whole journey for me was just incredible. Like, obviously, we had the semi-final as well, you know what I mean? That was unbelievable. I played in District for that. And then on the day before Madrid, I the flight was through the night, so I had an early night and that got me head down for a couple of hours. Got up, so it was all a bit like a dream, really, to be honest. Because I got up, left my birds, got a taxi to the airport, and walking through the airport, sees Jono in the distance. I'm like, oh yeah, there's the boys here, and there's John Power, and it was just like, As if this is happening, like, you know what I mean?
Just getting on a plane to go and play
the next cast, you know what I mean? I'm thinking, what? So once we landed and all that, great, met up with all the lads, Jamie, KO, all that. Went for our brekkie and our had a scram. And then when we got to that fan park, like, this massive space on it, and it was just like, whoa. And I was thinking, I wonder if this is going to get filled here. And then as the day went on, after a couple of hours, it was just absolutely rammed. And it was that big monument in the middle of the thing. And I was just thinking, I'm roasting hot. And I was thinking, this is just incredible, this. And then obviously the performance side of it, I'm not going to lie, you know, my nerves were gone. sort of standing side of the stage, just looking out to these like masses of a pure sea of red, you know what I mean? And then I come out, and one thing I do remember doing there was a couple of bottles of water set up on the stage for us, you know, with the lids off, just so like in between songs, you could just duck down, have a bit of your water, carry on playing. And I come out, all guns blazing, you know, trying to rile the crowd up. And I volleyed the bottle of water straight into the crowd. And I was like, but I end up saying, yeah, that'll cool you down, you know what I mean? But, one of the best experiences in my life, if not the best experience in my life.
So you mentioned Jamie there doing it with him. You know, you've been doing your own stuff for a while. It's not like you've suddenly gone, I'll start by my own stuff. You know, you've talked about it there, but when Jamie was starting to promote his own stuff, you know, I'm sure there was people saying, oh, it's going to be hard to separate yourself from, you know, everyone knows you as the footy. They won't want to hear your own stuff and stuff like that. But
yeah,
he's proved that's not the case, hasn't he? You know, he's got a number six album now. It's done, and people have backed him. And, you know, we're going to talk about your own music now. But first of all, what Jamie's done must be such an inspiration for you.
Totally is, yeah. Because, I mean, well, first things first, like you've just said, He did manage to separate himself, and by bringing out an album that's got seriously good tracks on it, you know what I mean? Tune after tune, they're all prolific songs, you know what I mean? So for me anyway, that when he brought out that, I was following the singles as they were being released, you know what I mean? And that's something's got to give. That song, the thing he brought it out just before the summer.
Mm.
That song's absolutely beautiful. But the whole album in general is superb. And it was just for me, it has inspired me to push on. Because it seems to me as though the Liverpool songwriters, there's sort of a new breed that seemed to be sort of breaking the way through. So to see Jamie doing well it's hope, you know what I mean? It's hope for other musicians, and it's hope for the Liverpool music scene as well.
Absolutely. To see someone who everyone can relate to as well, and it's just
pure working class tunes, aren't they? Yeah. You know what I mean? And that's good to hear as well. He's not just singing about garbage or nonsense, you know what I mean? It's serious stuff that he's putting on the line there. So I'm proud of that. Proud that there's someone out there doing that, because I try to do that myself with you know, I try to mix the tunes up, but I'd rather the messages have something to say, you know what I mean? Something serious to say, rather than just, you know, riff-raff.
Well, people will hear that on your new single. The single's called The Life I Left Behind. It's out now, isn't it? I mean, I've heard it, so it must be.
It's 18th of September. It comes out officially. So looking forward to it coming out. Of the day before, supposed to have a gig in the Angus. Got a gig in the Angus supporting Ian Prowse. So looking forward to that as well. But yeah, the track will be available on all platforms, you know, iTunes, Amazon Music, Spotify, YouTube, SoundCloud, across the board on the 18th of September. So very, very, very excited for that.
You must be pleased with how it's turned out. I think your voice sounds boss on it. Obviously, I've heard you sing before, but I think, you know, it sounds incredible on the record.
Thanks very much. Well, you know, I've got a lot to thank. For example, the studio I went in. It's a quality studio, Whitewood Studio.
I love it in there. I've recorded in there, yeah.
Yeah, it really sound in there. And top man Daniel Woodward.
Yeah.
He
does all the shipbuilder stuff as well.
That's right, yeah, he does the shipbuilder stuff, yeah. Which they're another brilliant band. It's nice that there is the Liverpool music scene is thriving, I think, at the moment. In Whitewoods, you know, I've done my last four tracks with him, including this one, and he always gets a good sound. I mean, like, I've had a few reviews already, people commenting on the vocals, which is, it's lovely to hear people picking up on the vocals. But as I say, it's the methods that Danny uses, like the old school and the Boss, you know. So
shout out to Danny, indeed.
As
you say, so the single is The Life I Left Behind. It's out on 18th of September. It'll be available everywhere you can normally stream music, Spotify and all that. You can follow Ben on there and you'll get notifications when it goes up. He's also on Facebook and Instagram, so it's Ben Burke Music on both of them. And yeah, support him. Give him a shout if you enjoy it. If you heard him on this, if you enjoy it, I'm sure you're welcoming. And you mentioned next Thursday night as well. You're out in Angus for people who are sort of out in Liverpool. I mean, you must be looking forward to playing.
I can't, but it's amazing. I mean, like, to be honest, I can't wait to be playing original stuff, because I mean, I do cover. I've just started doing a couple of the cover gigs and stuff again, but it's not the same. You know what I mean? As getting out there and I'm banging my own tunes out, like, so I can't wait. And the Angus is a belter as well, and it's proper Boss bar, like, so I can't wait to be playing in there.
Yeah, I was in there both Friday and Saturday night, which is probably going a bit too far in terms of supporting new bars. But you know what can I say? I'm that sort of fella. Ben, Tom, man, nice one for joining us. Best of luck with it. And like, yeah, we'll get you back home on the albums.
Thank you very much for having us on, John. Nice one.
And it's John Gibbons, and I'm with multi-European Cup winner Alan Kennedy. You might have a few European Cups, but he's got a world record. It was tense, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And I was witnessing it as well. And I've got Graham Sharp over there just to write it all out and make sure it was witnessed by all of us. But what a great attempt. But it was nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
I think he knew he could do it. But, like, you know, whether point something of a second is good enough. It was right to the last, the last part of it that he managed to do it. And I actually, honestly, thought he hadn't done it. I thought I'd read it wrong. But he had done it, like, and we all just clapped. And it was quite emotional as well, because, you know, a world record attempt to do something like that, doesn't matter what it is, you've got to have concentration, you've got to have the right circumstances.
Yeah.
He had them today. Like, you know, he was really concentrating. He was in, was it 0.6 of a second for the first one?
Yeah.
0.4 of a second for the second one. And all of a sudden, he's done it. Like, you know, it was fantastic. And, you know, all credit to him and what he's hopefully going to achieve. He said he wants to be a footballer. Well, I think he's a bit long in the tooth. You know? I think he's had his day, like, you know.
But freestyling, he's fine on.
Yeah, but unbelievable. If that record may be beaten, and it may not be beaten. Somebody might want to come along and try and beat it. But we've had the official, you know, guy there from Guinness who was doing everything right, and we got the right result, which is great. It's a pleasure to be part of it. So good.
Obviously, we're down at the football pools on the eve of the football season starting, and Liverpool looking to defend the title. Do you think they got a good chance of doing it?
I do really think they've got a good chance. I think other teams will strengthen. Whether Liverpool need to remains to be seen, but they've got a really good squad. They've got a really good method of playing football. And for me, they have been the best team the last couple of seasons. Man City pushed the bar a couple of years ago. Liverpool took them on. And unfortunately, couldn't quite do it last season. But this season, Liverpool have been unbelievable. I think they've played the football that possibly people might say that we played back in the 70s and 80s on difficult pitches as well. But the football they've played has been outstanding, from the goalkeeper all the way through to, we used to say in the old days, the number 11 or number 12 in David Fairclough's instance. So they've done well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, John Farnham's done well today. Congratulations to him. A new world record holder for Maradona skills. Nice one, AK. Cheers.
Thank you very much. It's lovely to be part of it. Lovely, honestly.
And here's John Gibbons for the weekend. I'm joined over Zoom by Steve Goldsmith, who's going to talk to us about a couple of things here. But first of all, obviously goings on at Sunderland. I mean, it's on and off the pitch as ever, Stephen, up there. Are you any new owners?
Well, this is the mystery, to be honest, Gibbo. They say they are in exclusivity period with somebody. I'm suspicious, I'll be honest. I think they want to hang around to try and make some money on the football club, which is clear they've tried to do from the start. I'll give you a quick summary if you want from the moment they walked in, because people might have seen Sun Until I Die and then maybe not quite know what's going on with the owners and the situation. So we're owned by two guys called Stuart Donald and Charlie Methven. Stuart Donald had previously been owner at Eastleigh Football Club, which is a non-league team. They came in, much fanfare, said they had this billionaire from Uruguay in the background for a long-term plan. They said they had paid £40 million to purchase the club and that the previous owner, Salah Short, had written off all debts. Huge debts, by the way. We were hundreds of millions of pounds in debt. They engaged with us and the fanzines and podcasts, told everybody how good we were, massaged our egos, set attendance targets, replaced the sun-worn seats that were an eyesore there. They discussed lots of future plans. These are the things you get to see on Sunderland Till I Die Season 2, where it looks like they are passionate, the heart's in the right place. A lot of talk, but it unraveled when Sunderland didn't get promoted. And yeah. I think that is because the issue with hiding in plain sight, which is what I think these guys have done by speaking of podcasts, speaking of fanzines, speaking about their ambitious plans, where the whole time in the background they're trying to sell the club. When a football club like Sunderland is in League One, the third tier of English football, it's not sustainable. We aren't sustainable at this level. And if we remain here for much longer, we could go bust. And the problem is when that happens and you fail to get promoted and then none of these promises that you've made come to fruition, we aren't the fan base to just sit here and not ask why. Yeah. and not ask the questions and not make it difficult for them. Now, maybe the idea was that they'd be off into the sunset by now and Sunderland would be in the Championship and they would have made a nice little profit on the club, having a good time along the way, getting to play a football owner, having some fans worship them. But the clues are on Sunderland Till I Die if you watch it. So the way Charlie Methven speaks to people, I don't know if you remember the way he was speaking to that girl over the whole attendance thing. Yeah. He's since left. He was removed from his position because he attended the fans meeting and didn't speak very highly of people from the Northeast. So he was removed from his position. And that's just the tip of the iceberg with him, really. And if you remember, every time they went to speak to Stuart Donald, he was getting interviewed in his house. And he lives in Oxford. It's hundreds of miles away from Sunderland. And that gives you an indication of how long he actually spends here, which is no time whatsoever. What came out, you know, with the finances, when you can start looking into those things a year later and stuff. And there are people involved with the podcast who was more interested in this stuff than me, in truth. But what became clear was they hadn't paid £40 million for the club. And that £25 million from that £40 million was actually a parachute payment that the club was owed. And they had used that money to pay for the purchase of the club, which got a lot of fans' backs up. They said they'll pay it back, but they've removed the obligation to do so. So the gloves came off really from both sides at this point, and their tactic is to call the fans toxic and say that Sunderland fans have a reputation for being demanding. I mean, we're at the lowest point in our 130-odd year history, really. So I think calling the fans impatient is the most laughable thing ever, considering we got 30,000 fans as an average attendance last season. We nearly got took over by some American, Michael Dell from Dell Computer fame.
Yeah.
He had a consortium ready to buy us that fell through, possibly because this 40 million quid that the owner's going around telling people he'll take. He says, "I just want me money back," he says, but he didn't pay that money because the parachute payment has paid for most of it. And they've just tied themselves up in knots with half-truths, and I'm praying that there's something going on, but I'm really, really suspicious that, you know, every time they get a bit of pressure, they do something to take the pressure off. And I'm just suspicious that that's all this is, because the fans aren't really in uproar about the owners at the moment, because we are being told that we're going to be bought by somebody else. The worst thing they've done, Gibbo, to be fair, is the way they've dismantled our academy, Category 1 academy. You know, the guy who's just had his hands on the Premier League trophy for you came through that academy.
Yeah.
Your friend down the road, who I know gets a lot of stick by years, but he's England's number one goalkeeper. He came through that academy. John Egan, who plays for Sheffield United, he came through. Jack Colback, Martin Waghorn. You know, in the last few years, this academy produces, and they have ripped it to shreds. and they have gone and they have sold our young players, 16-year-old players in a lot of cases, onto clubs like yourself. Mm. For relative peanuts, I would say, when you look how much Birmingham have just demanded that they got for their guy. Now, I'm not suggesting some of the players were on that level, but it's a bit of a worrying time, that really, for me. That's the worst thing about it.
If they don't change the ownership, is it possible to have a positive season, do you think? Are the sort of players there? I know it's sort of hard to tell for anyone at the moment, but, you know, do you think it's a case of, for as long as they're there, you sort of won't succeed, or do you think it is possible, despite them, that you could, you know, go up this season?
I haven't been that optimistic about things on the pitch for a while. I mean, we were screwed over, by the way, with the way the League One finished. We were 3 points off second place, and we were in seventh. And then Wickham, who were behind us in eighth, got promoted. They were out playing the playoffs because they worked out the points per game. Mm-hmm. Even Sunderland spanked Wickham 4-0 at a time when Wickham were top of the league and about 16 points ahead of Sunderland. Mm-hmm. By the time the shutdown happened, Sunderland were above Wickham. So how they work that out is just, you know, I can't believe that. To be honest, can you tell pre-season? I think Will Grigg looks a different animal this year. He's come back. He looks really lean. He looks in shape. There's not a lot to go off, really, Gibbo, because we haven't seen us playing that long. We played Aston Villa under 21s the other day, which would never be a competitive game of football. Mm-hmm. We beat them 8-1, and we had our second string out. I'm optimistic. It's difficult to say, because this league seems to be getting stronger every season. We don't have any parachute payments now. I think the squad's as good as, I think it's in the top four squads in the division, I would say.
Yeah.
So we've got a chance, but we need to get up there, or we need to be taken over. I've got a list of here, some of the young players we've getting rid of, by the way. Sam Greenwood to Arsenal. He's just signed for Leeds, actually. They paid a couple of million quid for him. Michael Wood gone to Willem too. Lucas Stevenson has gone to you guys. Luke Hewitson has gone to you. James McConnell has gone to you. Jacob Yug has gone to Hoffenheim. Andrew Nelson to Dundee. Logan Pye to Man United. Joe Hugel to Man United. Barley Mumbert to Norwich. Cole Kerman to Middlesbrough. Joe Lazaro to Swansea. Josh Maggio to Bordeaux. They're all the young players we've lost in 18 months.
Yeah,
and some of those players, like you guys and Manu, were paying like 200 grand for some of those players. And these are players who are representing England in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you're going to speculate, why are they going for so cheap? Because the guys can't afford to run the club, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's my guess. I need to be clear, I'm saying it's my guess, because these guys like suing people or threatening to sue people. So I'm just being clear. Yeah,
I appreciate that.
Yeah. It's a mess off the pitch. On the pitch, I don't know. Phil Parkinson got some stick as a manager, because when he first came, he had five defenders and he was hoofing the ball up and we just didn't have the players for it. It looks a little bit tidy now. It was a back five and now it's a back three with wing backs, and we're keeping the ball on the floor and we're playing some decent stuff. I don't know. You never know with this lot. We're not going to be outside the playoffs. The league's not good enough for that. Mm-hmm. But we aren't sustainable. The running costs, we're just too big for it.
Mm.
So we need to get up. We need to get up as soon as we can.
Well, fingers crossed for you, and we will follow it throughout the season, and I'm sure we'll get you back on at some point to see how you're doing. But in the meantime, I just wanted to mention as well, if it's okay with you, clothing label that you're involved with, to give that a bit of a push, FDR. Yeah. Do you want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so it's Fritidsglada, it's a Swedish word, but FDR clothing, as you say, so Foxtrot Delta Romeo, FDR clothing. You can get us on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. And it's somebody who I'm friends with who set it up, and I'm helping out. And you've seen a lot of independent clothing ranges set up now, aimed at football fans who don't necessarily want to wear club merchandise, want to go to the game. It's a culture everybody's familiar with, isn't it?
Yeah.
And what you're seeing starting to happen is, after spending thousands and thousands of pounds over the years and handing over a lot of money to these big brands, a lot of these lads are having a go, and I think it's great. You know, why not use your passion for something to see if you can set it up? It's similar to what you lads are doing, really. You know, you've taken your passion for supporting Liverpool, and you think maybe you don't rate the outside broadcasting as much, and you think we can have a job. We can have a go at this, and you set something up and you say, oh, there you go, try it. If you like it, you might like it, you might not, and it's worked out for you because you're good at, to you you're good at what you do. And for me, it's a similar thing. And you know, these independent brands need some support.
Yeah.
You know, the designs are really, really good because they're passionate about it. Fritidsglad, as I said, is a Swedish word. It was inspired by hiking in the Swedish mountains, actually, the King's Trail and Kebnekaise, which is a trail. And Swedish people make outdoor activity clothing look very cool and very trendy, unlike English people, when you think about what they look like. And most designer brands were made for other things initially. I think off the top of my head, Paul and Shark was a yachting clothing brand, I think. So it's based on that. It's inspired by how the Swedish pull off that look, and you get a lot of Swedish fans come and support English clubs, don't you?
Yeah.
So in terms of what they offer, the stuff you'd expect, like T-shirts and polos and stuff, the T-shirts are selling really, really well. It's a really, really beautiful design with a range of nice colours. So I, you know, bulk hats, caps, jackets are on the way, that kind of thing. So we'll give you a discount code if you want one for your listeners.
Yeah, no, that'd be 10%
great. 10% discount code. Yeah. W10. We can see what we've done there. A lot of thought went into that one. what I'll say is it is lowercase TAW. Any problems, yeah, and just let me know. But you can get us on Twitter and Instagram, FDR Clothing. We just turned that Fritidsglad into an abbreviation for obvious reasons. But check it out. And the T-shirts in particular have gone down really, really well.
Yeah, I've had a look at the T-shirts. They are lovely. So do have a little look at what Steve's up to there, FDR Clothing, as we say, and a little discount for you as well. Can't be bad. But Steve, nice one for joining us, and best of luck with everything.
Thank you. Good luck for the season. Can I just leave a question for your listeners to answer? Because I've been on a nail for this for ages, and he keeps putting it off. He keeps saying, "Oh, we'll ask them someday." I want to know who your subscribers, who their favourite Macam is.
Okay.
And you've got three choices, haven't you? You've got Alan Kennedy.
Yeah. You were sore today.
You saw, right? Okay, well, there you go. You've got Bob Paisley and you've got Jordan Henderson.
I mean, it's not a bad thing. They've got some European Cups and some trophies between them. So there you are. So it's been a rich area for Liverpool to tap into, that is for sure. So do let us know on Twitter who your favourite is there. That'll be a fun game to play. But in the meantime, nice one to see. I'm back to the show.
So there you go. Thanks to everyone there for the inserts. And we are back now with the same panel to talk about Liverpool's first game of the season. Leeds United at home, 5:30 kickoff on Saturday. I just want to run through some things here. I mean, you know, my personal experience of Leeds United. I checked today. Mark Viduka's 44 now. Tony Yeboah's 54. And Alan Smith is 39. It's been a long, long time since Leeds have been knocking around in the Premier League. 16 years. We've played them in the League Cup. Ben Woodburn scored and is the youngest ever player to score for Liverpool. When he scored against them, he's now gone out on loan. But the last time they beat us was April 2001, when Rio Ferdinand and Lee Bowyer scored for them and Steven Gerrard scored for us. We've only played them seven times since. And yeah, they've been knocking around, doing what they've been doing in the lower leagues. A few reminders as well, I think, about the Reds and how good we've been. Johnny was very good on that very subject there in the first bit. You have to go back to April 2017 for the last time Liverpool lost a league game at Anfield. 59 matches. We're also on a run of 25 wins in 26 home league games. The only drop point in that time was the 1-1 draw with Burnley in July. Phil, I know you like a flutter. I know you work in that industry and everything else. No one's going to be backing Leeds very much, I wouldn't have thought, for this one. You can get 10-1 on them.
You can. I mean, I think people probably will do because it's just 10-1 to win a football match, and people think, oh, I'll have a little go at that. I mean, I think it'd be a difficult game. I think they are a good side. They'll be full of energy. They'll be full of running. They've got a very, very good manager who'll probably come here and have a plan, but I think there's an issue in that if you look at the teams we generally have a little bit of a problem with, it's not really high-energy ones. It's a high-energy team. We usually manage to pick them off when they sort of gamble and get something wrong. The teams who we struggle against maybe, not necessarily struggle, that's the wrong word, but if you look at Watford, for example, Watford, when we lost there, they were well-organised, they frustrated us, and then they hit us on the break. That's probably not what Leeds are going to try and do. I don't think they'll have a bit of a go, because that's the kind of team they are. So I think we'll probably be all right. I think we'll win. I think it might be a bit difficult, though, and there might be a bit of frustration around it, to be honest.
Do you think, what do you think about Leeds as well, in terms of they've signed a couple of new players there? Obviously, the big ones, the striker Rodrigo from Valencia, £29 million. Bielsa literally said nothing in his press conference today. It's like one sentence answers to everything. He's given absolutely nothing away. You've got the German defender that they signed as well. Obviously, they would have liked to have kept Ben White. They've tried all summer. They didn't get him. He stayed at Brighton. Liverpool allegedly were sniffing as well. Do you think the idea of dropping a brand new centre-half into a defence, which looks likely, and also maybe starting with a brand new striker as well, you know, their chinks are life for Liverpool? Because the other option is go Bamford, and he didn't exactly light the world on fire when he was last up in the Premier League.
I mean, Bamford didn't really light the Championship on fire. If you look back, he was a functional part of how they played, as opposed to actually being the man who'd go and get you 25, 30 goals, which is sort of, when you see a team top of the Championship, you think that's what their striker should be doing. Because they didn't just win the Championship, they absolutely demolished everyone last year. It wasn't really a competition from Christmas, to be honest. And then you look at the centre forward and he's not scored. So that is an obvious area for improvement for them. But I would almost be surprised if the players they brought in have been able to get up to speed with what Bielsa wants from them, particularly the fact that that centre-back, I can't remember, I've got completely blank, his first name's Robin, I think, but I can't remember what his second name is.
His second name is K-O-C-H. It's up to you how you want to say that, Phil.
Okay, Robin Koch.
But it's not Koch.
There we go. But yeah, I mean, he was in the Germany squad in the Nations League, yeah. And Rodrigo was away with Spain, so that's taken effectively 2 weeks worth of training away from them for them to learn exactly what he wants. And like, it wouldn't shock me if neither of them started, and if they did, it's probably a little bit of an advantage for us. And it's probably not the worst time to play Leeds. This, I think, we've got two games straight out the stalls where they are good times for us to play us. Stamford Bridge away with no crowd against a team who are gelling. Leeds coming up for promotion, not quite sure what to expect, not really up to the exact pace of what teams like us do yet. There's a lot of things to like about us this weekend. And as I said before, I think we will win, and it just might be a little bit awkward, I think, is probably the best way of putting it.
And Armani, we're obviously Liverpool fans and we're biased towards Liverpool and we're very proud of that fact. It is funny how everyone twists little things their way. So, you know, Phil's made some very good points there about, you know, Stamford Bridge with no crowd and things like that. Leeds newly promoted, it might all be a bit overwhelming for them. Bielsa, I did go do the press conference, and yeah, he was saying absolutely not. He just about managed some craze for Jurgen Klopp. There was no chat about the bucket, so can't confirm or deny whether he's bringing the bucket to Anfield to sit on. But what he did say was, you know, there was a big question about Anfield and what it meant to him, what his memories of it were and all this. And he just came back with, we're going to play at Anfield, but Anfield's only Anfield when it's full. Now, that's the closest he came to beef. So, come on, come out swinging, Armani. Tell him he's an op-ed.
Well, to be honest with you, like, for most international supporters, we don't get a lot of access to the Championship. It didn't really have a lot of access in the States or other parts of the world. So, like, this is a lot of people's first look at Leeds in, like, over a decade. Like, there's just... I mean, James Milner, we know, played for him, and for a lot of people, that's their only exposure. They don't really know about the rivalry. They don't really kind of know that, like, at one point, this would have been, like, one of the toughest fixtures for Liverpool. There's a bit of a kind of, like, a northern rivalry going on there, and it's something that's, like, not super familiar to people. But for Anfield, for the most part, like, I think, yeah, they always want to come in and have a show about, don't they? Like, you know, I'm so glad that, you know, we've got this horrible situation happening and there's no fans in the ground. It's absolutely miserable. And who knows what the hell the British government's doing, because, like, apparently you guys can't, like, get together with more than six people again.
Yeah.
Like, so that's just happened. Like, and so who knows what's going on with that. But if there was ever a team that you would trust to get through this moment without the fans there, without the crowd there, just back them up and wore them along, it's going to be Liverpool. So I almost feel bad for Leeds if they're coming in at a time where everybody's going to be focused. They're going to want to give everybody a lift. They know how tough it's been. And yeah, pretty much can't wait to get, like, Mo Salah in front of them, you know, give them some shtick.
Is right. And Johnny, a good word there from Amani that I'm glad she said, and you're the right person to come to on this, because I know you like to comment on how people in other parts of the country dress and things like that. how do you feel about Leeds? Because you know, Amani mentioned the northern rivalry. I mean, they've not been kicking about for us for a long time, as I mentioned before. But, you know, once upon a time, like if you read the old editions of The End and stuff like that, there was lots and lots of piss taken out of Leeds United, their fans, what they wore, how they acted. When they last came to Anfield, obviously they won't be there on Saturday, but when they last came to Anfield for that League Cup game, they did have a bit of a go, sang some songs and stuff like that, tried to get us going. How are you about Leeds?
Well, I used to work. I've worked in Leeds twice, actually, so I've got a bit of a, I wouldn't say a fondness for it. I've got an understanding of it, if you like. And I think as a northern city, it's a nice place to visit. I used to be, I used to go clubbing in Leeds quite a lot, actually, in the early 90s, I've got a bit of a fondness from that point of view, and. Contrary to popular belief and what is written in The End, they're not all scruffy Milltown bastards, but there's plenty of them if you want to go and find them. Like, there is, like, the footy fans seem to be a different group from the people who would like go clubbing or the people you'd meet in the city centre. Some wild get up, some wild gear. Like, I can remember in the early 2000s, they tried to get Semi Flares going again at one stage. They were like boot cut jeans, but two boot cuts, if that makes sense. And they were paired with very, very moody trainees. And remember when Beckham did that, like, sort of centre Mohican thing, and I saw quite a lot of that. But none of them looked like David Beckham, I can assure you. It was pretty grim. But I have to say, they rival only Manchester City for having the worst denims on planet Earth. Awful. But I think one of the positives about them coming back, and they shouldn't be underestimated, is it gives Manchester United an additional couple of derbies a season. Like, the hatred between Leeds and Manchester United for overseas fans who maybe have not been around Leeds or known about Leeds, Man United now have to deal with hating Liverpool, hating Man City, and now hating Leeds United. And I think at different times in their history, we've all vied for top spot in who they hate the most. And Leeds, believe it or not, Leeds has been up the top for a long, long time. So I think them having two extra games where there's going to be so much riding on it for them emotionally, and I think it can only be good for us, to be honest with you. So, yeah, fuck them.
Well, away from the jeans and back to the football then, Phil. I mean, Liverpool scored 85 last season in the Premier League, 99 points. Leeds scored 77 in the Championship, 93 points, albeit from 46 games. But so, you know, there's a few things that point to goals there, perhaps. Obviously, this stage last season, newly promoted side, we beat Norwich 4-1 on the opening day, 3-0 up in 28 minutes and all the rest of it. Are you expecting goals, number one question? And then number two, what are you expecting from the team? Because I don't think there's going to be a lot of surprises from the Liverpool team, is there?
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if they went 1-0 up and we won, to be perfectly honest. I think the first 15 could be something we really have to weather and get through and sort of frustrate them a little bit, because they'll come and I think they will genuinely have a go at us. But I think if they don't get one early, I think it might be a long day for them, because they might sort of blow themselves out and get themselves into a position where it's like, well, we had a plan to do this early, we haven't done it, what do we do now? In terms of the team, you would almost think that the midfield, with a couple of injuries, almost picks itself, doesn't it? I think it's probably, you would probably expect Fabinho, Wijnaldum and Keita as a three, I reckon. Because there's no Chamberlain, no Henderson, you wouldn't have thought. So I think he's touch and go. He's probably another week away, I think, from what I saw.
He's trained, hasn't he?
Because he wasn't involved in the friendly last Saturday, was he?
No.
So if you're thinking if he's not involved in a friendly where we only had, but I don't even think we had 11 subs, did we? He's probably not probably not going to be involved now. It also wouldn't shock me if he went for it a little bit and played Minamino instead of either Wijnaldum or Keita and had a little bit of a 4-2-3-1 kind of thing going on, and we go sort of semi-similar to how we finished the Charity Shield, which I don't know whether would be a great idea from the start of a match against a team who'll play like Leeds will. But it wouldn't shock me if that was the case. I don't think I'd like to see it, but I wouldn't be shocked by it.
Do you think he can crowbar Milner in anywhere for the romance?
I mean, maybe, but as long as I don't have to watch Milner and Wijnaldum on the same pitch, I'll be... Just pick one of them. If you want one of them, that's fine. Just don't do both of them, please, for everyone's sake.
And you're saying the front three is the front three, the back four is the back four? Yeah.
That's what you'd think, isn't it? There's no reason not to.
No chink of life for Matip?
I think he only got... Did he only get 45 last week? I think he's probably a little bit... He's probably in a situation where if you need him to, he could play, but I just don't think there's any need to play him. And I also think that Gomez is the manager's first choice partner for Van Dijk as well, so he's probably... Matip probably won't play until the Bradford or Lincoln game, I wouldn't expect, and that's where I think you see his first minutes.
Okay. Armani, any disagreements with what Phil said there?
Yeah, I'm hoping Curtis gets a look, to be honest with you. He looked like he really wanted to play, definitely in the preseason games that we've had. I think he looks ready, and there's not many players that you can be like, okay, they look ready, but like he 100% looks ready. I don't think he wants to let go. And you get to do all those Nike photo shoots, and he doesn't want it to end. You know, he wants to be a superstar, I think. So maybe he gets a look in.
Okay, and Johnny, what about you? What are you thinking about the team and about some of the lads as well? I think that, you know, have shined in pre-season. Do you think we see any of them? So, you know, Phil mentioned Minamino. Keita's played pretty well pre-season and he played well, you know, post-lockdown and all that. You know, there's even a thing here. I don't think he'd start, but is there an argument even to have Elliot around? Because, you know, he did himself no harm with what he did against Blackpool.
I'd like us to see us start with the team. I think Keita is probably the one exception. Is a regular. I think from our regular starting lineup, I think Keita in for Henderson. I think is an obvious change. But rather than being too experimental in this first game, you can make an argument. Well, Bielsa won't be expecting it, and you can take them by surprise. But I just think we've got to give them a welcome to the Premier League that shows them the gulf between the top of the Championship and the very, 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 very top of the Premier League. And I think if we can maybe get lucky in the early quarter of the game, maybe get a goal, maybe even get a second goal, you can then begin to, once you're in front in the second half, you can introduce some of these players. You can give Harvey Elliott 30 minutes. You can maybe give Minamino a half, do you know what I mean? But I think we should try and create that goal. I agree with Phil. I don't think it's going to be easy. I'm saying we can get 2-0 up in 20 minutes. This team's capable of doing that. But I do think the Bielsa team will work incredibly hard. We'll have to work for our dinner. But I'm absolutely convinced there should be a massive gulf between these two teams. I like the sound of them having a new centre-half. I think Bobby Firmino will like the sound of them having a new centre-half, as will Sadio Mane, as will Mohamed Salah. And you could just imagine if they see that weakness and smell that weakness, we exploiting it quite early on. I just hope that they all bring their shooting boots and can make sure that we can be ruthless when the chances come.
Give us a score prediction then, Johnny, as well.
Liverpool's opening day record until fairly recently has not been great, but I'm still going to go for 4-0.
Phil, what are you saying?
I'll take a steady 2-0, I think.
Okay, and Armani?
I think 4-1. I think eventually we'll just tire them out and our front three will go to work.
Okay, I'm going to say 3-1 to the mighty Reds. Let's hope they get a victory of some sort anyway. Any win is a good win. And when the Reds win, we all win. We shall be doing all the stuff that we always do. Post-match video, post-match podcast, stuff on the website, stuff on the socials. So yeah, enjoy the footy with us at the Anfield app. Enjoy the footy in general. And let's hope the Reds get off to a winning start. Thanks to everyone on the weekender. That has been the big pre-season, building up to the season weekender. Up the fucking Reds.
Sports Social Podcast Network.